You're listening to the News Project podcast for the week of May 3rd, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Hiking history. Londonderry holds a town meeting. And a sum up of town meetings of Sandgate and Stratton.
People sort their weekends off in several different ways, but for one group of four area residents, joined occasionally by a few other friends and acquaintances, Saturday morning, bright and early, means it's time to go for a hike. It was about a year ago that Dave Cannell of Manchester and Andy Holzman of Sunderland began getting together on Saturday mornings to hike some of the hills and historical places, some well known, some less so, that abound in the Northshire and beyond. They would get the day started over a cup of coffee at Charlie's Restaurant on Bonnet Street in Manchester, plot their course, and head out. Eventually, they were joined regularly by Sean Harrington and Lindsay Hardy, and Charlie's became Base Camp, a place to finalize plans and catch up. Before a recent hike that would take them, plus Lindsay's daughter Hannah, up the eastern slopes of Mount Equinox, they talked about how it all came to be.
Well, Andy and I realized that life got in our way, and we hadn't seen each other, spent much time in the last several months or maybe the last couple of years, so we decided that we'd like to get together and start hiking Saturday mornings. So we started going up to the preserve, because that's always got multiple choices. You can always take different loops and this and that. And then as it kind of got crowded, you know, with the COVID, we were a little uncomfortable being around so many people that we decided that we'd head out and venture out and find some other places that were less populated.
So typically our routes, you know, graduated from winter snowshoe, micro spikes, to when, you know, this time of year when things start melting down and you want to get out and do some more serious hiking. So we started off with, summits in mind, you know, so whether it be Equinox or one day we chose to go up Baker Peak. And so I think, you know, in the beginning, most of our hikes, again, had like a summit destination, which is typical for what we've done in the past. And so here we are on top of Baker Peak. And I sat down and I thought, why is this name Baker Peak? What's the source of the name? And, sure enough, top of Baker Peak, it got a cell signal, and I popped in Wikipedia, and up popped the name Remember Baker. So, knowing now that we were incorrect, we realized at that moment that Baker Peak was named after, falsely, Remember Baker. So that started our historic approach to our escapades and our explorations. And so from that point on, we came down into the valleys, started looking at things like 150-year-old sawdust piles, gravestones, foundations, holes in the ground, reading the woods, and just exploring things that hadn't been found before, for us at least. And so we've been doing that pretty much every weekend ever since.
But typically there was a little bit of discussion during the week, a topic that would pop up. And then as we started meeting here, then along the way, we were blessed to have Lindsay and Sean join us. You know, all of a sudden, we had an upgrade.
We had an upgrade.
We got some new talent, some new energy, some new ideas. And this has been going on now since last March or April. Every Saturday we're here. Lindsay and Sean let their occupation and jobs and raising children get in the way a little bit. So Andy and I are 100% convinced.
It's like playtime. It's my favorite day of the week. Yeah, I got to come along. Sean got an invitation because I can't remember what the first hike was, but it was something historical, and they wanted his, you know, historical perspective. And he called me during the week and he said, why don't you come along and surprise Dave Q? And I said that nothing would make me happier than doing that.
Or Dave Q.
So showed up one Saturday and I don't know if that was a quarry or what that was, but then ever since then, like Dave said, throughout the week, somebody comes up with an idea, and usually I just show up here on Saturday morning and say, sure.
Yeah, no, it's been, we've had a lot of fun, you know? We you know, we try to be factual.
Sometimes, right.
sometimes I encourage the legend. But, you know, we have a lot of laughs.
When we're at a site that has some sort of historical significance, like when we went to, what was it, Downer's Glen, to be able to be in the site, and then he just pulls up his phone and goes like this, and then says, this is what it looked like in 1890, or 1930, or whatever. So then we have the visual of what it used to look like, and we're actually standing in the space, which is remarkable. And then you feel that history. And, you know, some of these places that we've been to, is we don't know the last time somebody has stood there.
Yeah.
And that's really, really kind of fascinating and powerful.
Yeah, there's a, Sean, there's a couple of things. Wherever Sean points, that's where we go. When Sean says it's up there, that's what we do. We go wherever he says. But and similar to that, when Andy and I were down to Ghost Town, and we're standing at the, would have been the porch of the old hotel, trying to visualize, you know, where the clock tower and the gambling casino was, and he pulls up that same picture, and it was pretty simple. There, we're looking out across here. No, the trolley's not there, but we can visualize it being there. And then right out there, that's got to be where the clock tower and the gambling casino was. There it was.
Yeah.
We poked around the woods, and there's all kinds of remains and stuff kicking around. But there it was. And then from there, we went on and found maybe a half a dozen charcoal kills.
Then it was off to wherever. The first stop being a parking area just above Burn Burton Academy, where the trailhead for the Blue Summit Trail begins. Up and up we go, noting wildlife, and on to the first stop, the Deer Knoll, with its sweeping views of the valley below. Mount Equinox used to be the site of no small amount of business activity. Logging was one, so was bottled water. And the crew stopped to check out one of the buildings still left where that water used to be gathered. Several old foundations of buildings can be spotted if you know where to look. One of them is a former pestilence house, an eerie echo of today's experience with the COVID pandemic. Back in the 19th century, people who contracted contagious pestilences anyway, would be sheltered and isolated from the general community, as Dave Gunnell explained.
I'm thinking maybe in the late 1800s, and it was common to have them throughout New England. I found three or four other ones in Vermont, not a lot of information. This was New England's way, not just Vermont's way, of taking the disease-infected population, put them out in the boonies, they will bring you food once in a while, you're going to survive here.
From there, it was off to the famous Rocking Stone, where one rock is carefully balanced on another. This is, however, on private land, so permission needs to be obtained before walking there. Then it was time to head back down, along several trails that crisscross the side of the mountain, and maybe to start thinking about where to go next week. Back at the starting point, it was now open season for an ice cream snack, according to the team.
Yeah, it was a perfect end to a perfect hike. Ice cream.
Creamiest. That's why we did it. That's the treat.
Exactly.
An excuse to go have ice cream?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
We earned it. We paid. We're good to go.
Next week, it looks like they'll be heading for the far reaches of Glastonbury to check out the old ghost town of Fayville, once a thriving logging community, but which has been abandoned and uninhabited for decades. Sounds like fun and a great way to start the weekend. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Town meeting in Londonderry looked a little different this year. Instead of jamming in together at the Town Hall meeting space in South Londonderry, about 70 civic-minded residents gathered at Pingree Park, a recreational spot just off Route 30 in the town of Londonderry, under an overcast sky and intermittent breezes, to take part in the annual exercise of local grassroots democracy. The visuals may have been a little different, as was the timing, Saturday, May 1st. Londonderry was one of the communities which opted to delay holding its town meeting for a few months after the usual first Tuesday in March date, in order to allow for enough time to ease some of the pandemic-induced restrictions to have an in-person, offline town meeting. But the sense of civic engagement and interest in town affairs was no different from before. The main item on the agenda that drew the most discussion was a proposal to spend $45,000 on a contract with the Windham County Sheriff's Department to provide policing services for the town. Previously, the town had contracted with the Vermont State Police for those services, but both town officials and the state police were ready for a change.
I just wanted to get a little history on how we got to this point with this article.
In 2016, the town voted to spend $86,000 on the Vermont State Police for a certain number of patrol hours per week. Over time, Select Board Chairwoman Georgianne Morris said, the availability of the Vermont State Police had dwindled to the point where this year they weren't sure they could provide any additional service. In addition, a policing committee had been formed to look at other options, and that led to discussions with the Windham County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant Christopher Norton from the Windham County Sheriff's Department spoke about what they could offer the town.
Hello. Along with that, we were able to provide other services, such as what I do now as the Highway Safety Coordinator. Some of you may have seen me in town. I have done some traffic enforcement here. But basically, that position allows me to travel throughout the county and help out with traffic-related issues. We also do contracting for all sorts of different events. As part of a full-service agency, sometimes those events are ones that we can provide as part of that contract as well, but we provide anything any other police department does, minus special teams like the state police would have.
In the end, voters approved the article. Speeding issues were another and related topic brought up by several residents in the audience during the meeting.
We have a problem. There is too much fast cars going in trucks going through from the corner store to Rouse Road. There are now over 10 children living along that stretch, that heavily residential stretch. And there is a library, there are kids on scooters. And I would like to bring this issue to the floor because I think something else needs to happen. People are not following those signs. I know it's a shortcut to get to work up at Stratton, but between 6:30 and 7:30, and also later in the evening on their way home, there's way too much speeding traffic. Something's going to happen, and I think we need to do something other than signs. And I know we talked about getting a part-time police, and that's great, but could we do something else?
Otherwise, townspeople voted to approve a general fund budget of $2,079,000, with total expenditures taking that to about $2.46 million. Still a decrease of about $110,000 from last year's $2.57 million. Voters also opted to establish a community economic improvement reserve fund intended to support revitalization and development efforts in Londonderry, along with a highway improvement reserve fund. Afterwards, we had a chance to talk with Georgianne Mora, who had been the chairwoman of the select board until the end of the meeting. She had announced she was stepping down from the select board and not running for re-election. Melissa Brown was elected to take her place.
I can't believe we got it done in 2 hours. That's got to be a record. We had originally contracted with the Vermont State Police in 2016 for up to 20 hours a week, and that amounted to $86,000 a year. But it was not a fixed number of hours. It was overtime hours that troopers could put in if they felt like it. And so for the first year, we did get close to 20 hours each week, but that dwindled over time for a number of reasons. They just, you know, were lacking in manpower because it was at the discretion of the individual troopers. Not many of them were interested in driving an hour each way to put in overtime, because while they were paid well for the time they were here, they weren't paid for their travel time.
The meeting was finished in about 2 hours, a bit shorter from the usual from previous meetings. Next year, residents will presumably be able to leave the folding chairs and blankets at home when they converge on the familiar meeting place in South Londonderry. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Sandgate and Stratton were two of the Northshire towns which held their annual town meetings in the beginning of May. Sandgate had an informational meeting on Monday, May 3rd, followed by Australian ballot voting on May 4th. Tuesday, May 4th was also the day the town of Stratton held their annual town meeting, an in-person traditional floor meeting at their town hall. Both communities opted to postpone the usual March town meeting for a couple of months in the hopes that some of the pandemic-induced restrictions would be less onerous. Those attending the Sandgate town meeting heard a legislative update from their state representatives, Kathleen James and Seth Bongartz, and the town select board discussed and answered questions about the articles on the town warning. A discussion about the money Sandgate is in line to receive through the ARPA, or American Rescue Plan Act, where communities will be receiving federal revenues directly on a per capita basis, was one topic of conversation, as was getting funding for maintaining gravel roads.
So, though quite a bit is still unknown, what we did find out from Karen is that town governments will be receiving about $99 per capita in direct local aid. So you can estimate about $99 per capita is going to become straight to town government. Counties are also receiving an additional $199 per capita. And the county money, since Vermont's a state that doesn't have a county governance structure, the county money is going to be divided up proportionally in some way, we're not quite sure yet, between the towns. So every town in Bennington County will be getting its town money and a share of its county money.
The big thing is that we put all of our culverts in, we've got most of our drainage is taken care of, but we've been told you need to build your roads up, but we can't build our roads up if we don't have gravel money.
And they won't give you a grant for gravel?
No, there are none in the state of Vermont.
It's considered maintenance, so they won't give you a grant for that.
But if you don't maintain, you don't achieve either.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
We don't want to take away that.
The informational meeting went by fairly quickly, with no outstanding or controversial questions being raised. Voters came back to the town hall the following day to vote through the proposed budget and elect town officers. Over on the other side of the mountain in Stratton, it was a fairly quick and straightforward meeting as well, the difference being that voters present decided everything off the floor. Given the COVID pandemic and the changes it imposed on town meetings and warnings, Stratton Select Board opted to keep the warning fairly basic. Elections were held for openings on the Select Board and other town offices. Both the General Fund and the Highway Fund budgets were passed, along with financial support for the town's fire department. Following a short break, after the town meeting was adjourned, Stratton School District held its annual meeting. Positions on the school board were filled, and the school budget of $1.23 million was approved, along with agreement by voters to pay the tuition for Burn Burton Academy. Town Clerk Kent Young summed things up afterwards.
Between the two meetings, they were very short for a normal meeting, but not significantly shorter than our meetings usually go. In a typical year, we do have a couple of issues that come up that are controversial or worth additional discussion. But like I said, we didn't really include anything on either of the agendas or the warnings that would be controversial. For instance, the marijuana situation that towns could vote on was put off. We probably consider that next year at the earliest, unless they want to bring it up sooner. But I think between nothing there and limited number of people here and with the COVID situation, I think the idea of trying to keep it short and sweet worked out well, and we are finished with another year's meeting.
Next year, presumably these meetings will be back to their usual times in early March. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.TV.